You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Hey, it's Sean Sullivan filling in for Phil Williams here on Right Side Radio. I host a show at FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile, the other end of the state. If you're swinging through, give us a chance. Check us out online as well. And it's good to be talking to folks in the north end of the state, as I'm doing every hour, making sure to do this is give shout-out to my wife's people, kinfolk in Huntsville and New Hope. Or does anybody call it No Hope? Because my family members on her side said they used to call it No Hope. Does anybody do that? But big hello to them. And, yeah, so we're down here in southwest Alabama. But it is a treat to get this man on the show because he comes on with one of my co-hosts here, or one of my fellow show hosts at FM Talk 106.5, Jeff Poor. And I sit with rapt attention when he talks to this man, especially on international issues and issues dealing with what we're dealing with right now, half a world away in Ukraine. A candidate for AL5 and Secretary Casey Wardinsky joining us now. Thanks for your time. Good to hear from you.
Well, thanks, Sean. Great to be on with you.
A big fan, really am. And I sit back in my office when you talk to Jeff, and I, you know, often jot down notes. So today I get to ask them to you, and it's good to have you on. I, you know, with your education and your service to our country, you're in a pretty highly sought after opinion when it comes to what's going on in Ukraine. And one of the things I was reading, you have a Master of Public Policy from the Harvard Kennedy School and a PhD in Policy Analysis, Economics, Statistics, and Decision-Making. Isn't that last one pretty darn important right now for what happens going forward? Isn't the decision-making day in and day out what I'm so scared of the people that are making those decisions for us? Walk through that, Casey.
Yeah, their decisions aren't data-based. They're sort of their version of religion-based, their leftist religion, and that leads you astray because you can see where it's taken our country, with whether it's inflation or military matters, almost anything you look at, it's all based on emotion rather than hard analysis based on data.
But that's where I hope there's some voices that can come through in that. Let's talk about this phase now of Russia's war against Ukraine. Failing to seize Kyiv and other places like that, but is this area of the East? You know, I know that the Russian propaganda, and they talk about it, it's the people that are most Russian-like and have the most connection language-wise and culture-wise to Russia. Is that maybe the proxy for the fact that it also is the area of Ukraine that seems to have the natural gas fields and the lithium? Do you think they overlay at all?
I wouldn't be the least bit surprised. The Russians, I think first and foremost, they want a buffer, and they can use the logic of, you know, ethnic Russian majority in the Donbass region, the Crimea, to assert, you know, some sort of sovereignty over that area. But it's kind of bogus when you look at it, because in 1994, when the Ukrainians agreed to return the nuclear warheads from the ICBMs that were in Ukraine to Russia, Russia, UK, France, and the United States agreed that they were a sovereign nation and that their borders would be respected. And, of course, that's not happening today. Russia has invaded them, and their borders are not being respected. And it sends a lesson to all these wannabe nuclear powers around the world that do not give up your nuclear weapons, you know, whether it's Iran or North Korea or the next, maybe Pakistan, the next nuclear wannabe.
Yeah, okay. Fantastic. And Secretary, this is what I want to talk about, is that idea that's come up in discussions on my show, that when the breakup of the Soviet Union happened and they made these deals that if you'll turn over the dukes and be a non-nuclear state, we will protect you. But what did we say? I mean, is it something that it's not like an Article 5 requirement for NATO, or is it? Where do you see that? How do we need to understand that play?
I think it was an agreement between political leaders. It was not ever ratified by the Senate, so it's not a treaty, and it doesn't carry the force of a treaty. And the agreements from Britain and France were even weaker than the ones from the United States. But clearly, Russia can't assert that Ukraine never really was a country and always was part of Russia, and they're just, you know, returning it to Russia. and that these parts of its borders, you know, that, you know, Donbass, Crimea, really ought to be part of Russia, because that was never agreed to at the time. And the Russians did agree, and the Ukrainians did give up their nuclear warheads. So that part of it, to me, is pretty concrete. What the Western powers would do, you know, if Russia didn't enter the Ukraine or violate this agreement, was never laid out clearly. And, you know, a lot of things are vague in this world, like our willingness to stand up and support Taiwan is very vague. And that is important because it lets great powers decide when to become involved and how to become involved and when not to become involved, particularly in this area of Central Europe, which has kind of been a birthplace of a lot of conflict over ethnic minorities and you know, contested turf. And that's kind of where World War I began. And we don't want to be the next great power that can't remember why we got drug into a war. We need to be real clear. And they are not part of NATO. We've had plenty of time to integrate them into NATO if we thought that was a good idea, and we didn't. And we specifically didn't bring them into NATO. And even if they were in NATO, Article 5 just says an attack on one is seen as an attack on many, but each of the members of NATO are essentially left to their own devices to figure out what to do about it. And it and doesn't necessarily mean armed conflict. It might mean logistic support or political support, calls on NATO to go to the UN and invoke Article 51 of the UN Charter to bring about an immediate end of hostilities. So even the NATO North Atlantic Treaty doesn't mean, you know, the shooting starts.
Yeah, I do worry about it going, you know, it goes to the UN, which has been proved even more than ever. Yeah, useless. And I mean, Russia on the Security Council and here people making commentary on the judgments of what they're doing in an active war. Secretary, what about it's interesting to talk about that the NATO reaction is not all tanks and missile strikes. But on the other side, too, I know that if a tank, you know, rolls into Poland, if a missile goes into Poland, if Russian troops go into Poland, OK, it is clear that that is a violation and attack. But what if through omission or commission, there's a strike once again at Chernobyl or, you know, one of the other nuclear facilities or a chemical attack like this has been reported here by the Ukrainians overnight, and that drifts across a border. So it's not actually Russian troops, munitions, artillery, but it drifts across the border. Is that, in your understanding and your wisdom, is that something that, like, a Poland would claim, well, we've been violated?
Well, they might. But Article 5 is pretty clear. It says an armed attack, not just, you know, a violation of their environmental space or things like that. So it leaves open the question of cyber attacks. It might leave open the question of EMP. Might leave open the question of, you know, something done against space assets. Certainly, economic warfare is not an armed attack. And so, still, if, you know, they're not shooting as they go across the border, whatever it is, that wouldn't seem to trigger Article 5.
Another front here, and China's involvement. You know, if China's in it for China, we all know that, but openly sending weapons now to Serbia. Do we need to read anything into that? What, when you hear that, what is that? Secretary, what do you think of that?
Well, I think China's going to do what's in China's best interests, and the United States needs to do what's in the United States' best interests. So we were moving forces for many, many years, and now you can see it in our budgets, to deal with China. China's the number one threat. It is not Russia. You know, this whole Russiagate thing was a farce and wasted a huge opportunity to neutralize Russia or even maybe, you know, turn them against China. That seems to go out the window now. But China's got to be the priority. NATO countries have a population greater than ours. They have an economy about the size, if not greater than ours. They need to carry a lot of the burden with this issue in Europe. They've done very little in terms of preparing themselves for this. Germany made themselves exceptionally vulnerable to economic warfare from Russia, denial of gas, and so forth. So they need to stand up quickly to deal with this. We can reinforce with assets they don't have, space and so forth, the nuclear umbrella. But we need to move rapidly to deal with China, because they're, I think yesterday out came a report that they're quickly growing their strategic nuclear force. Their navy is bigger than ours in ships, not tonnage, but growing very rapidly. And they're a long way off, and the things they want to capture are very close to them and far from us, like Taiwan.
Yeah, you know, many people wondered that if China would use this as an opportunity, right? When this happened as a deflection of attention, and then they could go and make a push for Taiwan. But then others say, well, maybe not. Now that the whole world's watching these kind of situations, it might make it tougher for China to do that.
I think this may slow them down a little bit on Taiwan, not because the whole world's watching, but because they suffer from some of the same failings that the Russian system does. You know, the Russian generals probably did not give Putin a real good picture of the prospects of invading Ukraine and how things have been going. And so Putin's probably making some pretty bad decisions based on bad info. Xi in China suffers from the same situation. And their situation is, you know, if you've been given resources and told to build a decent military, and you say you have, it's hard to go back to the leader and say, well, our military isn't all that great, and it's not doing too well. In the United States, we obviously get lousy military advice from people like General Milley and so forth, but we don't take people out in the back and shoot them when we get that kind of advice. We just hopefully get rid of them. So that's number one. Number two is I think the Chinese have gone to school on this thing and found out drones and these man-portable missiles can be pretty devastating, and crossing a 20-mile body of water is much tougher than entering the Donbass, and they're probably doing a quick rethink about their preparedness and the challenges they'd face in entering Taiwan.
Now, as you look at the timeline here, and somebody early said, well, this will be over in a couple weeks. Obviously, the that was a disagreement from the Ukrainians that the military and those citizens that stayed behind. I mean, in your wisdom in doing this, what do you see? I mean, do you see we look at it as a stalemate? We look at Secretary, what do you see here going forward?
I think Russia's in a real tough spot. You know, they entered Ukraine with about 200,000 forces. A good share of them were conscripts, which apparently are not particularly well disciplined or trained. The logistics systems are not much good once you get about 100 miles away from railroads. The railroads in Ukraine all run through big cities, and they struggle to capture these big cities. So the logistics plays strongly against the Russians. The discipline and training of their force is not great, and it's not a large force, particularly when you look at a country of 43 million people. So I think they're in big trouble. They may regroup and just try and consolidate their gains in Donbass and Crimea. We'll see. But they clearly overreached when they went beyond that and try to get sort of the eastern half of Ukraine and some of these big cities. So I think they're in big trouble. And it all plays to China. They're now becoming China's kind of creature economically. They're selling oil at a discount to China. They're still making bank on it because oil's trading at such a premium to before the war. But China's buying their commodities, buying their oil. They're becoming their major trading partner, and I imagine they're going to start picking up a lot of Russian industries. The capital they accumulate to Russia.
Thank you. We'll be right back. More with Casey Wardinsky here on Right Side Radio. For Phil Williams. Thank you to Phil and the crew there at VNN for making this happen. And good to talk to this man, Casey Wardinsky, and talking about foreign affairs. But I also want to shift gears here, Secretary, and talk about your run for AL5 for House. And, you know, looking through your website here and different planks of your platform, I got to arrive at this Second Amendment one. I'm kind of, predictable that I go to the Second Amendment question. President Biden yesterday spent, I don't know, half his discussion on crime in the United States talking about ghost guns. What are ghost guns a major threat? What do you think?
No. And his whole discussion's a farce anyway. I mean, pretty soon he's going to have to outlaw billets of aluminum. Because the technology we have today, you can just get a billet of aluminum and machine out in a CNC machine, you know, the pieces and parts you need to assemble a weapon.
He went on to also talk about universal background checks, which even if somebody believed in those, how they would ever be enforced, well, without registering guns, how that would happen. But he also talked about an assault weapons ban. I was a 20-something-year-old guy working in gun shop back then during the Clinton era gun ban. And, yeah, you couldn't have a folding stock or a flash suppressor or a bayonet mount. You know, and other than that, they regulated magazines. I mean, it was a farce at that point. I mean, is that what he wants to do again? He said he's coming back. He's going to do it again.
Yeah, well, he's playing to the hard left. They've got this fetish for taking away people's rights to defend themselves. So first, you know, defund the police. So there are no police. If there are police, deny the police the authority to go protect citizens. And then next, remove the authority of people to defend themselves in their own homes. And my favorite was that guy up in Wisconsin. You know, everybody's got to take a beating sometime when they're having the trial of the young man that, you know, had been at the Waukesha situation. So they're just against our ability to defend ourselves. And at the end of the day, you got to believe it's all nefarious.
I mean, and that's my question from this, Secretary, because I you bring up the idea of gun violence in the United States. I think any fair-minded person says, yes, let's figure out, you know, let's try to do what we can to deal with this. It's affecting communities everywhere. But then they come out with a suite of things that are fantastical. Have nothing to do with the actual fight against gun violence in our country.
Oh, yeah. And they even sneak stuff in like this omnibus bill they just passed a couple weeks ago to fund the government for the remainder of the year. I think it was down around page 2200. You know, they essentially said if you go in for a universal background check and buy a firearm, if it's denied, that triggers a police investigation now. And there's plenty of people with very common names that are going to bang into the database, and maybe it'll bang into an erroneous entry from somebody with a similar name that had a record or reason not to be able to have a firearm. And now you're getting investigated and most likely titled as well, which means you've got a permanent entry that, you know, there was a firearms inquiry and investigation against you. Citizens don't need that. The Second Amendment is, you know, part of natural law. You have a right to defend yourself.
There it is. If people want to, and I'm sure very familiar with you, NAL5, but more information online, where do they go?
Friendsofkc.com.
Very good. Secretary Wardinsky, good talking to you. Hopefully we can do it again down here at this neck of the woods down here in South Alabama.
Be happy to do that, Sean. Thanks.
All right. There he is. It is Casey Wardinsky. And we're coming back. More of Right Side Radio right here on WVNN.